Okay. So I'm trying to teach you guys everything I know in 3 hours. You're kind of getting that feeling, aren't you? So, but I want to give you a lot of practical information. That's the key. So let's go on to our next one here. Okay, let's talk about the hands-on physical examination. And the really important thing to do when you're doing your physical exam is make sure that you get into a habit, a thorough, systematic evaluation. So it's second nature for you to go through it. Actually, when I do go through my physical examination with the bird, I'm talking all the time. You hear me talking all the time here. What I do is I say, okay, the feathers on top of the head look good, the nostrils are clean, the ears. So as I'm looking at things, because some people just look at them, people don't know what you're looking at, but as I'm going through everything, I'm telling what I'm looking at, what looks normal, what looks abnormal, so they get a feel for what I'm looking at and what I see as normal is abnormal. And clients like that because they know exactly what I'm talking about, what I'm thinking. So I will tell you that proper capture is essential. And restraint is critical to a really good physical examination for the bird. Oh, by the way, this slide here is actually an overview of the erupting volcano in Hawaii, Kilauea. My wife and I took a helicopter ride, and we got back from Hawaii. We found out that like 85 of those things had crashed, and we never took a helicopter ride again. Okay. Anyway, capture restraint of pet birds. You've got to handle the bird to look to know what's going on with it as far as recognizing illness goes in these little guys. Clients judge your skill as an avian veterinarian on how you handle the bird. You may be the best diagnostician in the world, but if you hurt their bird, if you get red marks on the side of their face, if you break a blood feather, you break a toenail, you break their leg, they're going to be pretty darn angry at you. So the inability to handle the bird can lead to client dissatisfaction. We've talked about this before. Don't handle a bird that looks like it's in really bad shape. You know, I mean, these birds that are critically ill, you know, because they can die on your hands. But if a bird, even a normal bird, is handled improperly, that bird can be so stressed that it could die as well. Okay? So proper handling is key. Now, what's very, very essential for you to understand is for when the bird is handled, you have to have free movement of the sternum. Never close your hands around the bird's chest. The birds do not have a diaphragm, and their lungs don't expand and contract. Their air sacs expand and contract. So you close their hands around the chest, the sternum can't move, and the bird suffocates. That's why people say, well, geez, I held the bird in my hand. It died of fright. Well, you suffocated the bird, okay? So that's what happens. So you always immobilize the head and allow for free movement of the sternum. You never put your hands over the bird's chest because it won't be able to breathe, okay? They may do okay for a little bit, but pretty soon they're not going to be able to breathe. So always, free movement of the sternum is essential. When you're handling the bird, you or your technician should watch the bird for any signs of difficulty. If you notice the respirations are changing, if suddenly there's moist respirations, if the bird looks like its face is getting red, or something doesn't seem right, more than normal, then you should let the bird go, okay? And not a lot of times what happens is when the bird is in the towel, they can overheat, they can get hyperthermia. So when the bird looks like it's having difficulty, then you let the bird up. And quite often we do this when the bird goes through the examination, they get the blood drawn, and then doing the grooming, they notice the bird gets stressed. Our technicians have the savvy to know they're going to let the bird rest. Because you don't want to push and say, oh, just a few more minutes, I'll get it done. The bird could stress out. You don't want to have that happen. The amount of restraint varies with the type of bird. A hand-raised baby bird is going to be really easy to hand. You wouldn't essentially even need a towel. But, you know, clients say, well, geez, you don't need a towel on this bird. It's really sweet. And I say, no, the reason I use a towel is I don't want the bird to hurt its wings. I don't want the bird to hurt the legs because I want to wrap them in the towel. So this way I'm sure that nothing's going to get hurt because I say, I know it's nice. I know it's not going to struggle, but I don't want to take any chances. Now, in pan-fed babies, one habit that I have before I grab them and start doing examination is I kind of check that crop to make sure there's no food in there. Because with a hand-fed baby, you pick the bird up and you put a little undue pressure on that crop, just even a little gentle pressure, they're in a very vulnerable position. It's a back spot of the crop right down the windpipe and they aspirate. So when you see baby birds, especially birds that are hand-fed, you got to be very, very careful to make sure there's not a whole lot of food in the crop because they can aspirate. One thing that I do is the esophagus runs on the right side of their neck. So I take my finger, and I just kind of, when I hold him, I kind of put my finger on the right side of the neck so nothing will back up in there. So it's a nice little habit that I have to do that. When you have a wild caught bird, you may need two people to hold it. So this is the type of thing, you usually have a towel on here, but this is the type of thing, the esophagus runs over here. So I keep some pretty good pressure on here to make sure that things don't back up, if there's food in the crop, in the crop. It's very difficult to strangle a bird because their trachea is completely encased by cartilage. And like this type of bird, it's probably about the size of a soda straw. So you'd really have to grab it and really squeeze it to suffocate. So you can get some pretty good pressure on that neck, okay? But the trachea moves pretty freely in there. So it's very, very difficult to really strangle a bird per se. Now, if you have overzealous restraint, it could lead to a fracture or dislocation. A really big problem that sometimes people fall in a bad habit with is with the white-faced birds, okay? Your macaws, especially, or the African greys. You're holding them on the side of the face, the bird's struggling, and then you take your fingers off and they get these great big red spots. They're harmless, they'll go away, but it's like the client think you punch the bird in the face, okay? So, what I do, and we'll talk about how to hold the bird, but I don't even hold the bird in the side of the face at all. And especially these white-faced birds, I make sure that no pressure's on the side of the face, because even though it's harmless, the people get kind of pissed off about it, okay? Now, people say, oh, let me hold the bird. Never, for liability's sake. Don't let them hurt the bird because the bird freaks out and they'll bite them. You know, they get. And one time, I'm looking at a bird, I'm holding the bird, I'm paying attention, and all of a sudden the guy goes to kiss the bird and the bird bit him right in the lip. I said, why'd you kiss the bird? I said, the bird's stressed. But this is the type of thing that people, I was trying to calm him down. You know, and it just happened in an instant. And I always warn people, just kind of keep away from the bird while I'm looking at it. You can maybe gentle stroke on the head. And I don't particularly like to catch the birds off people. I'm pretty good at it, but when you try to catch them off people, the first thing they do is they go to reach down and grab on something. So what I do when if I can't get them and they're on the person, I try to make sure that I get them so their head's not going down and grab, because the first thing they'll try to do is nail the person. Anyway, when you go to catch the bird, obviously make sure the exam room doors are closed. Remove any perch or toy that might interfere with capture. You don't want to make it a rodeo. If you can't have a room that you can darken, it's even better because you can sneak up on the bird. And this is pretty darn important. If you're going to a small opening with a towel to grab the bird, make sure that when you take your hands out, you have enough room for the towel, your hands, and the bird, because it's pretty embarrassing. All of a sudden you're there and you can't get your hands through. So evaluate the opening. That's happened to me, obviously. That's personal experience. Okay, not anymore, though. All right, towels versus gloves. A lot of people use gloves, but now towels are the only way to go. Your hands are hidden behind the towel and they're protected, number one. Number two, you can drape the towel over the bird so it's protected. Number three, the birds don't see the hands, so they don't become hand shy, they become towel shy. And number four, that I can do pretty much an exam all by myself with a bird wrapped in a towel. Okay? So it makes it a lot easier. Gloves, they look rough. They associate with hands, make your hands shy. It's hard to clean the gloves. You have to have so many gloves to keep, it's a nightmare. So never use gloves. We do use gloves. We look at raptors, obviously, because of their feet. But that's the only time, and it's usually the falconer does that. With the small birds, we catch them barehand or paper towel if you prefer. And all you do to catch them is you just take your hand in there and you just reach for their head. And then you kind of wrap your hand around the bird. No pressure on the chest. The key to catching a bird is you try to catch them when they're not looking at you. You know what I mean? So they're kind of running around. So wait for that moment where they turn their head around. I mean, you hate to make it look like a rodeo when you're trying to catch the bird, but you can get pretty good at it. People, you know, because I'm an ex-football player, they say, oh, you're going to crush him. You're going to crush him. You're such a big bruiser. I said, oh, man, I've been doing this 27 years. I'm pretty good at it by now. I said, only crushed a few. And then another one, they say, well, you're holding the head too hard. And I said, well, I popped a few heads when I first started, but I've been pretty good at it, you know. So, you know, I have this sense of humor when people are pretty used to it finally. Anyway, larger birds, lovebirds, conures, and larger birds require a towel. When you start looking at your Amazons, cockatoos, macaws, you should really have an assistant. As far as when you catch a tame bird, it's pretty easy. You just kind of drop the towel over and just kind of gently wrap them up. Very, very easy. We have a series here. This is a nice little baby cockatoo. Very sweet bird. Just gently draping the towel around him. No problems. And then you just wrap it in the towel and you rest the bird on your forearm. So I do the examination. The bird is resting on my forearm just like this. I hold the head and the bird is resting on the inside of my forearm wrapped in the towel. A wild or untamed large bird is a whole different ball game. There are two birds I think are going to retire me. They are two macaws. They are hard as hell to catch and they're getting smarter every year. And I told the owners, I said, there's two birds, and one of these birds is going to retire me because one day I'm not going to be able to catch them. I'm just going to drop the towel, and I'm just going to ride off in the sunset. And I'm running out of tricks. These birds are really smart. They roll over on their back. They grab with their feet. And, I mean, it's just instinct to catch those birds. I'll tell you, I'm trying all kinds of tricks. But typically what I tell people with these wild birds is you try to be patient, and you wait for the bird to turn away from you. There's some birds that don't turn away from you, and what I do with those birds, I kind of bunch up some towel, and they go to grab the towel, and they bite in the towel, and I grab them real quick, okay? You gotta be pretty good at doing that, because if you miss, you could be missing one of these, okay? But anyway, I try to get them when they've turned away from me, I try to get them when either climbing, so I get that quick shot and I get them on the back of the head. So I try to do it when their back is turned to me. Another thing you can do if the bird's lying on the back like this, you can just take the towel on both sides, just kind of scoop the bird up all at once. It's a daunting task, I'll tell you, with the hyacinths and the big macaws. I mean, it can be pretty tricky, but you get pretty good at it. Otherwise, I say out of necessity, otherwise you can play bongo drums. Okay. Anyway, this is the type of thing. This is the challenge right here. A macaw like this laying on their back. They're grabbing their feet. They're flapping their wings. This is our bird tech who's been with us 20 years, so she's really good. She actually says she closes her eyes when she catches one like this. But she just kind of wraps on either side real quick and scoops them right up. So, I mean, there's no easy way to teach you guys how to do that, but that's how you restrain the bird afterwards. You hold them and just kind of rest them on your forearm. The different methods of holding the bird's head. This is my preferred method. When I started, I used to hold them on the side of the mandible, but unfortunately with some of these white-faced birds, you can cause some of that apparent bruising. It's kind of hard to see. This bird wasn't cooperating very well because he didn't have a towel. But what I do is I take my thumb and I put it underneath their lower mandible and immobilize in there. It's nice and solid. You can't cause any damage. And I crook my index finger behind their head. And then you kind of extend your fingers a little bit and immobilize their head. And then they're resting in your hand. And that's a great way to hold them. It completely opens the head. You can check the ears. You can check everything. When you hold them on the side of the face, it's hard to evaluate the ears. So just kind of practice this way. And this is the best way to do it. Other ways people do it, this doesn't look very good, but actually what it is people just wrap their fingers around the bird's neck and then kind of extend their fingers up a little bit. That's another way to immobilize the head. This is the one where you hold them on the side of the face. And I used to do that, but I changed the other way because you get limited exposure up in here. Another way that people like to do it is they take their index finger, their middle finger, on either side of the bird's neck and then extend it and immobilize them that way. My friend Marge Wisman likes to do it this way. That's what she said. The helmet grip. For people that have small hands and have big birds to see, what you do is you have your thumb on the side of the face, the middle finger on the side of the face, and your index finger on top of the head. So that's what they call it, the helmet grip. So with people with small hands and seeing big birds, it's a good way to immobilize them that way. It's called the helmet grip. So those are the five basic ways to hold the bird's head. And, of course, you hold them in your forearm and you wrap them in the towel. So with practice, you get pretty good at it. As far as doing the physical exam, you start with the head and you work downward. You're very systematic about it. So we're going to try to get all this done. I'm going to talk about a lot of different things here. I'm going to try to show you a lot of different pictures just so you get exposure to different type of things. The reason I look at the feathers on the head first is the bird has some type of systemic disease. You're going to see abnormal feathers on the head. So you get the parrot that has chewed up feathers on his chest, on his legs. He's probably feather picking, self-induced. But if you've got a bird who's missing feathers on top of the head, then you start thinking some type of systemic disease, something like beak and feather disease. Or there's a possibility, if you see little black stumps on top of the head, if the bird is with another bird, then it's being picked on by the other bird. Okay? So you may see traumatic feather loss. Okay? So that's why I always look at the crest, the feathers on the head first. And this is the type of thing you'll see. Hopefully you guys will never see these, but this is a cockatoo that has beak and feather disease. Beak and feather disease is caused by a virus. What the virus does, it can remain dormant. And then when the bird goes through a molt and suddenly all the new feathers come in are abnormal, they pinch off the base and they fall off. The virus affects all these feathers and pretty soon this bird will lose these feathers. They're very abnormal. It also affects the beak and so the beak becomes very abnormal. This tissue deteriorates here. So it's very painful because normally the upper beak and the lower beak line up, so it wears down. Well, in beak and feather, what happens is this becomes deteriorated in the upper beak, so the bird offsets their beak. So their upper beak overgrows this way, their lower beak overgrows this way, and then it gets so long it'll crack off. So it's a horrible disease. There's no treatment for it, but there's a screening test. A part of all our new bird examinations, especially with the big birds, is we recommend doing a beak and feather test, a polyoma test, and a psittacosis test. We get a panel. We send it to the University of Georgia, and they do a panel for all three of these things. And it's part of their post-purchase examination to protect the bird because psittacosis is a human health hazard, and beak and feather can carry by their birds and show no symptoms. So we're protecting their investment. We just check polyoma as well. So those are the three that we do, in addition to the CBC, the fecal, the mouth smear, and things like that. Yes? For the whole panel, it's about 90-some bucks to do that. So it's worth it. It protects their investment, though. This is a close-up, and the key here is pinching off of the feathers. You see that? How the feathers don't fill the follicle. They pinch off. It's very, very characteristic. And what happens is virus activates. The feathers pinch off and they fall off. When we first saw this, actually when I was working with Dr. Fieber in the early 80s, they thought this was due to an endocrine problem. They thought it was due to adrenal insufficiency. And then they called it folliculitis because they thought it was an infection of the feather follicles. And then they identified it was caused by a virus. We're seeing it more now in budgies and lovebirds. Okay? Believe it or not. And there you go. Here's this little lovebird that comes in, losing all its feathers, and had this bird had beak and feather. So you get these little lovebirds that come in that look like this, beak and feather. So we're seeing more and more of this in budgies and these guys. The sear should normally be dry and slightly flaky. You should see no unusual swellings. We talked about the sex determination in the budgies. We talked about the brown hypertrophy of the sear. Sometimes with the brown hypertrophy, it may get so built up that it can block the nares. If that happens, just kind of flick that stuff off and open up the nares for them. We talked about that. The nares should be similar in size, shape, and symmetry. It's normally open with no discharge. If they're standing above the nostrils, like we said before, it's due to rhinitis. If you have any discharge, you can smear on a slide and see what's going on, if it's bacteria, if it's fungal, what have you. When you see birds that have enlarged nares, it's probably due to chronic rhinitis or an injury. So sometimes you see these birds have an extra large naris. That's due to probably a chronic nasal infection. And sometimes what can happen, and those of you guys that see a lot of birds and see maybe some of these old quarantine birds that had a lot of problems and chronic nasal discharges, sometimes you see a groove in their beak, and that's due to old chronic nasal problems. This is the type of thing you'll see with an upper respiratory condition. Here you've got the rhinitis, you've got the nostrils are blocked, you've got standing above the nostrils, and you also have a periorbital sinusitis. See that swelling in there? So quite often when you have these upper respiratory, you have nasal things as well as sinus things. Okay? The beak should be smooth and clean. A little bit of flakiness is normal. And if the bird doesn't chew a whole lot, their beaks are going to look especially overgrown and especially flaky. So I encourage people to make sure their birds have enough to chew on. The one thing that I want you guys to remember, another thing, is you get these little budgies that come in for the beak trim. You got the budgie, that's the overgrown, that comes in for the overgrown beak. So he's just here for beak trim. You take the bird back, you trim his beak, and he dies. Fatty liver disease. Very characteristic signs you see of fatty liver disease. You see an overgrown, deteriorating beak. You see hemorrhage on the beak. You see hemorrhage on the toenails. You see a fat deposit on the chest and the abdomen, and you see an enlarged liver. You may see all, you may just see a few. But what happens is fat infiltrates into the liver, and it throws everything off. It interferes with calcium production, calcium used by the bird. That's why the beak may overgrow. And these birds' livers are completely low with fat, and they can die in your hand. So whenever a bird comes in for fatty liver beak trim, I do it because my staff wants it on my ass if the bird dies, I think. But I actually go in there because I tell them that, you know, I said, you know, I always worry about these fatty liver birds. They don't tolerate stress well. So that's my kind of precursor statement when I walk in there when we do those beak trims. And the people understand, but it is a risk. Crustiness on the beak could be due to external parasites such as mites and budgies. I have some slides of these for you. And we see the malocclusion, which is a twisting of the upper beak. Heredity, trauma, malnutrition, systemic disease can cause that. I will tell you, I don't know, those of you who've done a lot of birds, I don't know if you think this may be right, but the vast majority of malocclusion in I see are like in the macaws, we have their upper beak twisted, and it seems like most of the time it goes off to the right. And I think it is when people are hand feeding the birds and they're pushing on that beak when they're babies, it might cause some of the effect because most people are right-handed. I don't know. Could be hereditary. I don't know. But it always seems like it's that way. And if it's just a trick of fate, why is it always mainly going that way? But it's just something I've thought about. Just some slight of beak abnormalities. This is a dove. We see a lot of beak problems with doves because people don't give them mineral supplementation. They don't get the mineral supplementation, and their beak is like rubber. So when people have pigeons, when they have doves, you've got to make sure they have proper mineral supplementation so this type of thing doesn't happen. Here's the budgie that'll strike terror in your heart. The overgrown beak, the hemorrhage on the beak. This bird had a fat deposit on its chest, on its abdomen, had hemorrhage on the toenails, fatty liver disease. What we do with these birds, we put them on a drug called lactulose and milk thistle, and we put on colchicine as well because we want to protect that liver, and we try to change the diet. That's the way you've got to do it. Here's a lovebird that has fatty liver disease, overgrown beak. Hemorrhage on the beak, same type of thing. The reason their blood, they get the hemorrhage like that is because the liver's infiltrated fat, so it just can't clot the blood like it should. This bird had a tumor, the budgie, a tumor in its beak. Budgies are probably number one for cancer in the vertebrate animals. We see more tumors in these guys than anything. I always tell people, they say, how long do budgies live? And I said, well, if you get them past 5 years, you're doing pretty good because you usually get cancer between 2 and 5. But I saw one budgie that lived to be 20, and we had another budgie that lived to be 18, laid eggs, raised the babies, and died 6 months later. So they can live a long time. And the longest-lived budgies that we see are the green ones, okay? Just for your own effect. In fact, cockatiels. The longest-lived cockatiels, 30 years, gray ones, okay? The mutations don't live as long. The white faces, unfortunately, I know someone's talking about the white-faced bird, they just don't seem to live as long. We see a lot of kidney issues with them, but it's a lot of these new, fancier varieties just don't seem to do quite as well. But the old gray cockatiels live a long time, and the green budgies have the best chance for longevity. This beak here is overgrowing like crazy, obviously, as you can see. This bird has nematocoptic mange. Nematocopy is a normal inhabitant of the skin. Doesn't cause any problem. The bird gets stressed for whatever reason, and the mites overgrow. As it overgrows, it causes abnormal beak growth. It causes all this proliferation of this tissue on the face. Any featherless part of the body you can see develop, you'll see it on their feet and legs. You'll see it around their vent. You'll see it on the underside of their wings. In the old days, it was a problem because we used to use this cream called Urax cream. We'd apply it every 3 days, and it was messy. Now, ivermectin, give an injection of ivermectin, repeat it in 2 weeks, and it's gone. And then it's just a matter of trimming the beak until it comes back normal. Once you get rid of the mites, because it affects the beak development, once you trim it and you shape it and you get rid of the mites, the beak will come in normal. A lot of times you see budgies that have giardia have this develop. So make sure when you see this bird come in that you also do a fecal, make sure it doesn't have giardia. This is a macaw. The upper beak is hinged. The upper beak is not just stuck on their head. There's actually a little joint, so it actually moves. And you can see it when you're holding it trying to bite you. You can see it go up like this. What happened to this bird? This bird fell and hit the floor. And every time it yawned or opened its mouth, the beak got stuck. So I had to sit there and push it down and pop it into place. They went to another vet who wanted to wire the jaw shut and put a feeding tube in it. And I'm kind of ingenious, and my sister-in-law is an orthodontist, so we put braces on it, and it worked. The only problem was the rubber bands kind of fly to the house every once in a while. But it lasted about a week with these rubber bands, and the bird was fine. So I never published it. I should have, but I didn't. This is a bird that came in that people wanted to see why the bird died. it's unbelievable some of the stuff that we see, you know. And you see how the beak is overgrown here, and you see how that's rotten up there? That's beak and feather, okay? And that's the type of thing. This rots underneath here, and then you get this overgrowth here. And the upper beak broke off, and you can see there's no feathers on the head. Beak and feather disease. Sometimes you see birds with undershot jaws like this. A lot of times this happens when people are overbreeding these birds. You see a lot of congenital malformations. You see the malocclusion of the beak. You'll see twisted feet. So I always tell you breeders, don't overbreed your birds, because then you'll start having problems like this develop. This is the bird with the malocclusion here. This is what I was talking about. People hold the bird, they feed him. So they come feeding from this side of the esophagus over on this side of the neck. I know those you see birds now. When you see macaws, they have the malocclusion. I'll bet you they all point over to the right side like that. Okay, the mouth. I talked about the speculum before. And you got to be very, very careful when you open the mouth of cockatoos and macaws, because they bite down, and as strong as their beak is, those things can crack the beak, and it's a nightmare if that happens. I was showing Dr. Terry Campbell's new book, and he has a picture taking a sample out of a bird's mouth with a speculum, but he has tape all around it, and he softened it. So, I mean, that's the type of thing you have to worry about with the speculum. So you've got to get a good technique as far as opening the bird's mouth, especially when you're trying to go in there and take a mouth swab, and you think there's a pharyngitis. So if you don't have good control and you're putting the swab in and the bird cracks down, all of a sudden the swab breaks and they swallow it, then you got a surgery on your hands. But normally their mouth should be free of odor. The epithelium should be smooth. If you see a grayish cast in their mouth, if you see a pungent odor, there's a good chance that you may have a pharyngitis. We see this a lot in cockatoos. So one big part of our physical examination is we do mouth swabs. We do a Gram stain to check for bacterial population. If you see 10% or less gram negatives, that's okay. But when you start seeing more, then it's indicative of a problem, especially when you're seeing clinical signs. Off-weight lesions may be seen in the mouth due to several things. It could be squamous cell metaplasia due to vitamin A, bacteria, candida. Very, very common. We'll see candida infections in birds, especially in the hand-fed birds. Candida is almost a spontaneous disease in cockatiels. Hand-fed cockatiels, a lot of times breeders have trouble with candida, even their mouth down in their crop. Trichomonas. So don't look in the mouth and just assume that it's probably yeast or it's probably bacteria. Swab it and do a wet mouth, especially if you see cheesy stuff, because a lot of times it's trichomonas, especially with the wild birds. We see a lot of trichomonas in wild birds, and they have cheesy lesions in their mouth. Avian pox, not so much anymore. In the old days, we did. So here we got the mouth open. This bird had an abscess on its tongue. Okay. The coenal slit, when you look inside the mouth, one important thing you should evaluate is a coenal slit. It's a slit right in the roof of the mouth, the opening into the nasal passages. There are little structures on the side called papilla, and they should be sharp and relatively good length. When a bird has a vitamin A deficiency, those papilla are absent or blunted, and you'll see mucus in the mouth, and that indicates a vitamin A deficiency, and that's ample infection for secondary bacterial infections. So what you got to do when you're looking at mouth, you see blunted papilla, you see mucus, you see plaques in there, take a swab, make sure there's no bacteria. If it's clean, then you're dealing with a vitamin A deficiency. Or if there's bacteria, you've got a bacterial infection secondary to a vitamin A deficiency. We talked about the cloacal papillomas. We see it in Amazons, macaws, hawk-headed parrots. You see it in the coenal slit as well. It may appear as a vegetative growth, and it can be quite extensive, and it can even get into the glottis. This is a macaw, and here is a papilloma on the roof of the mouth. Here's your coenal slit, and there's the growth inside there. Here's a hawk-headed parrot, and there's a papilloma in there. We see a lot of papillomas in hawkheads. They're not that common. They're beautiful birds, but we saw a fair amount of papillomas in these guys. On the eyes, you may see discharges, conjunctivitis, matting of feathers around the eye, periophthalmic swelling. But I will tell you that you can sometimes see mycoplasma in budgies and cockatiels that have these chronic eye infections, these chronic conjunctivitis, sometimes be mycoplasma. And the latest cases of psittacosis we've been seeing have been in cockatiels with just the only sign of conjunctivitis. See a little cockatiel come in, just has these really runny eyes, just doesn't seem to do so hot. Good chance you could have psittacosis. So sometimes the only symptom you may see is conjunctivitis. So don't just think, it's just merely conjunctivitis. There can be other things worse happening than that. On the old days, we see a lot of avian pox. And avian pox, when these birds were imported, they would have deformation of the eyelids and also corneal ulcerations. We see cataracts in canaries. It's a hereditary problem. And there's nothing you can do about it. So you see these 2-3-year-old canaries that have cataracts. It's just hereditary. This is some periophthalmic swelling. The very difficult thing about birds and abscesses and pus is birds' pus is like cheese, so it's very difficult to get rid of some of these infections. So you cut the lances, you clean out and you flush it out. But even if there's a little fragment of that material, it can come back. That's why you see so many recurrent infections in birds, because they have the cheesy type pus, and they have these subcutaneous tortuous sinuses underneath the skin. And so it's very, very difficult to treat this stuff. It's really a nightmare with some of these things. But that's why they seem to have chronic rhinitis sometimes. Here, this cockatiel had psittacosis, that's why she's wearing the gloves. And you can see the conjunctivitis and the periophthalmic swelling in there, the sinusitis. Another thing that you may see, this bird came in because he had swelling on the side of his face. I put a needle in there, and air, it was all air. It was subcutaneous emphysema. It was a ruptured air sac. Sometimes when trauma, the bird will hit, and the air will kind of leak out from the air sac. It'll accumulate underneath the skin. You can lance it, you can drain it. Sometimes these things never go away. You keep draining, it just keeps refilling. You'll never find the opening. Here's a cockatoo that has also the same thing, a ruptured air sac, a swelling on the neck. That's also air that's trapped underneath there. This bird here, we opened up there, we found where the opening was, and we sealed it. But sometimes you're not that lucky. But they have 9 air sacs underneath their, throughout their body. And then when they get a trauma, one of those things may pop, and then air just kind of leaks out there. We first tried to lance this and drain it, but it just kept filling up, and then finally went in there surgically. But most of the time, you're not lucky with that. It can be a real nightmare sometimes, but ruptured air sac. As far as eye problems in birds, infectious disease are probably the most commonly reported eye problems. With the raptors, we see a lot of traumatic eye lesions. We don't really see many tumors of the eyelids or the nictitating membranes in birds. They have been described. As far as menace in birds, I mean, you can't really tell. The birds are flashing their eyes at you all the time, and birds have smooth as well as a skeletal muscle in their iris, so you just can't really tell much for the menace, and putting a pen light in there just really doesn't help much at all. So this is a finch. He had actually a traumatic wound to the side of his face, in his eye. He lost the eye, needless to say. Fortunately, we deal with enough ear problems in dogs, so God spared us. We don't see too many ear problems with birds, fortunately. The most often I've seen ear infection birds have been with lovebirds, and I'm saying, they have pus coming out of their ears. The way I treat it is I treat it with like dog eye drops. I just put it in there. Well, it gets kind of goopy. I will tell you, they'd be very careful using ointments with birds around feathered areas, because what it'll do is it'll get on the feathers, and the feathers will fall out with the ointment. We had one bird come in one time, they'd seen an ophthalmologist, had an eye infection. He told him to put ointment in the eye, as well as around the eye, not to drag the infection in the eye, and the bird lost all the feathers on the half of his head. Okay? So use ointment very sparingly around these guys. Sometimes when birds have an ear infection, they may do some pretty significant self-mutilation due to the pruritus. So this is a black palm cockatoo, 20 grand worth, so don't screw up with this bird. Anyway, here's his ear right in there. That's where their ear is. Here's a little Quaker parrot, and he's got a reddened ear. He's got a little otitis. We put some drops in here, cleared it right up. This is a macaw. You can't appreciate this, but he's a young macaw, and his ear never totally opened. We had to actually open this ear up. It was almost like a pinhole. It looks pretty good size there, but it's actually very small. Not too common to see. Sometimes these birds get these ear infection. They scratch the hell out of it. That's the pruritus in there. We don't see too many ear problems, though. When you're examining the bird, always check down the trachea and the windpipe in there and make sure everything's A-okay. Look for abscesses, any unusual swellings. They talk about looking for transilluminating the trachea for air sac mites. I will tell you, I've tried it and I've never seen it. Okay. Usually the way I treat air sac mites in birds is just from the sounds. They make a very characteristic moist, make this moist little coughing sound. So I have a canary come in that's making this very moist coughing sound. I'll treat it with ivermectin, repeat in a couple weeks, make sure they clean the caging environment to get rid of any mite eggs. But I've never seen them on trachea illumination. So you read it in the books, oh yeah, just trachea illumination, but I've never seen them. They're so tiny anyway. I just treat it by clinical signs. And the ivermectin's safe anyway. This is a thyroid dysplasia. We talked about that before. The respiratory tract, like I said, listen for any unusual sounds like clicking or wheezing or moist respirations, but you should develop a normal feel for what is normal in some of these birds, because the Pionis parrot will drive you crazy if you're not experienced, because you hold a Pionis parrot and what does it do? It goes, and that's normal, okay? So they make this horrible sound, and if you're not familiar with Pionis parrots, you think the bird has a horrible respiratory tract disease. So when your first Pionis comes in, you start holding it, and it makes that noise, that's okay. But if he's doing it, and he's just in the room with no one around, then there's something going on. But it's a stress sound. Just like African greys. African greys make this growling sound. So sometimes holding, he may make a low growl. That's okay, all right? So the more birds you see, the more familiarity you have with the normal signs. As I said before, if the bird gets stressed when you're handling it, you may have to let it go. In some cases, you may even have to give them oxygen. Now, I've been talking, you guys have heard me talking a little bit about Aspergillus, and that is a disease that is absolutely horrible in pet birds. Usually what you will see is you see some type of respiratory difficulty, sometimes a wheeze, sometimes a clicking sound. And this is a baby African gray that have Asper. You see this greenish mold in the lung here? We're really good at diagnosing it now because there's a lab at University of Miami that is really good at getting us results. So I highly recommend if you have any Asper cases or suspects that you send your stuff out to them. This is more typically what you see in an Asper case. The lungs are actually removed here, and these are fungal granulomas. That's why this is so hard to treat. We had an Amazon parrot that's been on Sporanox for a year and a half. And he's fine now. But we stuck with it because the bird couldn't even stand up. I mean, he was gasping. And fortunately, with Sporanox, you're able to take care of it. As I mentioned to somebody before, and I don't know if you heard it, African greys are very sensitive to Sporanox. And if you treat them with Sporanox, you give them kind of half the dose. Or what I do is I treat the African greys with a Lamisil. And if they're really bad case, you do a nebulization. Another problem with chronic respiratory disease in birds is air sac infection, air sacculitis. Here the air sac should be almost like clear like cellophane, a very thin walled, and it's full of pus. That bird was never going to get better because it's like cheese in their air sacs. That's why these chronic, horrible infections, you want to catch before it gets to this point, because there's not a whole lot you can do. When you palpate the crop, make sure it's empty before you handle, before you do too much with the bird, because you don't want the bird to aspirate. And if there's fluid, take care. I told you before about putting your hand on the right side of the neck, so make sure that stuff doesn't back up. The crop wall is relatively thin. In cases of candidiasis, it becomes very, very thick. So you get a young bird and you're palpating the crop and the wall feels thick, good chance you have candida in there. A problem that we see sometimes when people are careless are crop burns and fistulas in hand-fed birds. I have a slide, one in a second. So here you go. Here's a cockatiel. This is all full of fluid. What do? You pick the bird up, he goes, and all stuff flies out. What I did with that bird, I took an 18-gauge needle, drove it into the crop, and drained the fluid out before I even handled him, because there was no way you could even touch him. This bird had a foreign body. out of all the birds that we see, the birds that pick things up, chew it, and swallow it are cockatiels. So I see more foreign bodies in cockatiels than just about anything else. And then baby parrots, because they don't know what's food and what isn't. And there's been a lot of baby parrots. And fortunately, if you catch it early, you can sometimes milk the stuff up right out of the crop, up the esophagus, and grab it. We had a baby cockatiel, a baby macaw that swallowed a whole big piece of pineapple, and I was able to kind of milk it out and just grab it and do that. If it's fluid, you got to, okay? But if it's just something solid, I won't knock them out for that. You know, I'll just kind of do it there, because it's pretty easy to do it. But this bird here, I mean, you couldn't do much with him at all. He was sitting on top of the curtains. He kept chewing. He had a fabric foreign body in his crop. And this story here is kind of interesting, is that this pet store we were dealing with, she had wood shavings and bottom of cage. And I said, don't you ever worry that these birds are going to eat this? Because you don't know what's food and what isn't. She's never had a problem. I'd say a few weeks after I told that, she brought him a macaw and he ate all these wood shavings. Crop surgery is actually pretty easy. What you do is you make a cut through the skin, make a cut through the crop wall, pull the stuff out, close the crop, close the skin. Real easy. Real easy surgery. So it's much easier than trying to get the stuff out of the proventriculus. So if you have a bird that's got a foreign body in the crop, go for it. It's real easy surgery to do. You just got to make sure that there's no adhesion between the skin and the crop wall as you close. You want to have good, two clean, separate closures, because otherwise it'll break down. Now, this is a crop fistula. Okay, what happens in a crop fistula is people who are inexperienced feed the bird food that's too hot. Okay, and what happens when people use the microwave, so they stick the finger in there, on the top it's okay, they put the syringe, they draw off the bottom, which is really super duper hot. They put the food in the bird's crop, and they may notice the crop ball looks a little red, but the bird's a little uncomfortable, no big deal. A couple days later, they know it's getting a little redder, all of a sudden there's a scab, and all of a sudden the scab pops off, and the food just pours out. Because the skin and the crop are essentially epithelium, the body heals the skin to the crop lining, and it's done. It's healed. It's making a fistula. The way you treat this is you've got to make sure you get good margins, so you make sure that you get no connection between the skin and the crop, because if you have a little bit and then you close it, it's going to break down. So you've got to make a big enough margin around here and then close the crop wall separately and close the skin, and you're done. So the reason these surgeries fail is people don't make sure that they isolate the crop totally and they still have a little adhesion with the skin. I got really good at this because my friend had a quarantine station, and he had 50 birds that had burned crops. And so I did a lot of those surgeries, so I got really good at it. And when you examine the bird's chest, you feel the pectoral muscles. Sick birds lose weight rapidly, so if you feel a sharp keel bone, you've got a problem. Okay? So it's one of the initial signs of disease. Now, if you just look at the bird and their feathers ruffle, you can't tell that they're that thin. But when they lose their weight and their condition, then the keel bone is very, very prominent. But don't palpate the pectoral muscles alone. That's not the only way to evaluate weight. You've got to take the bird's weight to be sure. And we always record the weight for future comparisons. We have a couple birds that come in that have a very prominent crop, but they've been holding their weight. They're blue front macaws, and they've always been like that. Their chemistries, everything's been normal, but they're just a little thinner. But we just keep checking the weight to make sure they don't drop. This is a parakeet that's attached to a growth. Obviously, you can see that. This is called a lipogranuloma. You want to take that off surgically? Nope, because you send that bird home in a box. We try to deal with that medically, and he's doing okay. That's a real nightmare. That bird had fatty liver. So he's doing okay. I mean, it's gone down a little bit, but I told him he'll probably never be normal. When you palpate the abdomen, abdominal palpation in birds is pretty difficult because you have very little space. You have the keel bone and you have the pelvic bone, so there's very, very little room. So when you go in your palpation, there's not a whole lot that you can really feel in there. If you palpate deep, you can feel the gizzard on the left side, okay? And if they have some type of enlargement, the gizzard may be pushed back. One thing, I don't have it in here, but whenever you take a radiograph, your gizzard is a really good landmark because the gizzard is full of grit or minerals usually. So if you see it pushed back, because it lines up with the acetabula, so if it's pushed back, there's some type of enlargement in the cranial abdomen, which is a good chance it could be the liver. If it's pushed forward, it could be something such as something in the kidney or something in the gonad. If it's pushed over the side, there'd be something growing on this side. So the gizzard's a good reference point because sometimes the only thing you may be able to see clearly on the radiograph, so depending where the gizzard is pushed, it can help you with your diagnosis. You can detect lipomas and lipogranulomas in your palpation. You can also palpate the liver. Usually the right lobe of the liver protrudes, and you can feel the margin of it enlarge. You feel the bottom of the keel bone, and you can kind of feel that enlarged lobe of the liver, so you can detect that. You can feel neoplasms, eggs, and enlarged oviduct quite often as well. We see grossly enlarged abdomen can do to neoplasms, obesity, ascites, which can be secondary to heart disease, neoplasms, reproductive tract disorders. Probably one of the real common reasons that we see enlarged abdomens in birds is due to reproductive problems or liver problems. And here you've got this Amazon parrot, huge liver, just full of fat, fatty liver. So you feel this bird's abdomen's got a large abdomen, and you feel the margin of the liver. Like I said, nutritional problems are so very common, problems with the fat and everything like that. On the cut surface, that's what you see. Just nothing but fat. This bird here, it was losing weight, had a large abdomen. Bird obviously died. On a post-mortem, we cut this, and there was virtually no lumen. It just was all yellow. Bird had tuberculosis. Birds do not get TB in their lungs. Most of the time we see it in the intestinal tract. The way you diagnose it, with post-mortem, but another way you diagnose it is sometimes you're lucky you can see the acid-fast bacteria. Yes? You can't palpate. See, because, you know, I am all-knowing here, and I'm trying to be everything to you guys, so I actually have a slide of enlarged testicles for you guys today. See that? I'm trying to teach you everything I know. Okay. And actually, the sad thing about that, the bird with TB, was the fact that it was owned by an 80-some-year-old woman. So I had her get tested, and I had her whole family get tested, and they were all negative, fortunately. More likely, it's the bird getting TB from the people than the bird giving TB to the people. In fact, what happens in a lot of these third world countries, you know, they're around the people that actually have endemic TB, and that's how the birds get it. So, anyway. What's that? It was a wild-caught bird. It was it's one of those old-time birds. It came from probably, somewhere in South America. Sure. Okay, this is the reproductive tract of the bird. The cloaca is right down here. Here comes your intestinal tract, feeds over kind of on the right side here. Here are your kidneys. The ureters come down like this here, and here's your oviduct, and here's the ovary, large follicles on there. And the oviduct is very, very small in a bird that's in an active state. When they get really active, it gets quite huge. Now, this isn't that big, but wait till you see some of these. These are huge ovarian follicles on that bird, and this is a huge oviduct. This bird's abdomen is enlarged. Another tip when you look at the birds is when you see an enlarged vent like this, good chance the bird's in a reproductive state, okay? So when you see the bird start changing its personality a little bit, getting a little more protective of its cage, maybe more loving towards one person, more aggressive towards another, and then you see an enlarged vent, then you know dealing with some type of reproductive type of condition. But there's a close-up. Look at how big that oviduct is. Huge. And there are great big ovaries in there. Oh, I'm ovarian follicles. Now, I show you guys this, so if ever you do a post-mortem on a cockatoo, you don't think this is pathological. Cockatoos have black ovaries and they have black testicles. Okay? So it's no sign of disease, it's normal. And here's a follicle developing in there, and here's the bird's oviduct coming right down here. Okay. There you go. Enlarged testicles. This is a dove. So, you talk about Mr. Testosterone. I mean, this bird's got huge cojones in here. And you can actually see them radiographically sometimes. So when you get a bird that's in season, but you're right, you can see it radiographically sometimes. Exactly right. Okay? But when they're in season, they get huge. And then these will go down to a much smaller size. So that's actually normal. It's not cancer. It's just normal when they're in season. Now, we talked about the laparesis in the leg due to kidney problems. You do a radiograph of the bird. You want to see if you can see the tumor. Well, it's very difficult, a plain film x-ray. So you do a barium x-ray, and there you go. Here's the kidney tumor right in here. So this is when you nail your diagnosis in a renal tumor. Because in the plain film, everything's going to be white. You may see some displacement of the gizzard. Here's the gizzard. So you would see in this radiograph that the gizzard was pushed forward and off where it should be back here. This view here doesn't really help you a whole lot. But when you do the barium x-ray, and usually what I'll do is when I'm suspicious of a bird that has a kidney tumor, I will take a radiograph about 45 minutes after we give them the barium because I want to get lower in the system. So instead of doing it every 15 minutes, I just say, well, let's do one in 45 minutes and see what's happening in here. And that's how you make your diagnosis. I've never done that. Good question. Okay, now this one here. This is a bird that has a kidney tumor. So people say, well, can you take the kidney tumors out? Well, here you go. Here's the gizzard. Here's the intestinal tract. There's a tumor. No way. Some of them get really infiltrative. You will see some tumors that are firm like this, and you'll see some that are more cystic. And like you feel the fluid, and you draw it out, and I call it tumor juice. You know, when the staff, I put the needle aspirin, I get this brown stuff out. I say, oh, we got some tumor juice in there. So it's very carried. It's kind of a brownish red type of fluid. So when I see that little budgie, he's not using his leg. I say, oh, that's tumor juice. Okay. Now, we're talking about proventricular dilatation disease. I threw this one in because you're talking about enlarged abdomen. Here this bird comes in, it's losing weight, it's losing condition, and there's a fullness in the abdomen. We did a barium x-ray on this bird, and this is its proventriculus. This should be a fraction of that size. It is absolutely filled with food material because the gizzard stopped working. Here's a close-up. Now, do you notice how big this is and how small the gizzard is? The gizzard is non-functional, and it's lost its muscle mass in there. PDD, fine, okay. PDD is absolutely a horrible disease. If you guys want, and I should tell you right now, I wrote a book for AHA, and there's a lot of this stuff is in, there's a ton of stuff in there. We talk about PDD, and they've got it in the bookstore if you're interested. I'm kind of partial to the book, but take a look at it. But we do talk about PDD in there as well, and ASPR. Now, this is really a neat case. This bird came and they wanted to see where the bird died. They said the bird was eating and the bird dropped dead. Well, what do you see? The bird is completely emaciated, okay? But the crop is really enlarged and even the esophagus is enlarged. We open it up and sure, the bird was eaten. Crop's full of food, crop all the way down the esophagus, crop in the proventriculus, but nothing's happened down here. Bird was also passing undigested seed in the droppings. This bird had proventricular dilatation disease. And this is the type of thing that happens. The GI tract just stops working. So this bird was starving to death. He wasn't getting any benefit out of his diet. That's why he died. Other grossly enlarged abdomens, I should tell you guys, when you have a bird that has a grossly enlarged abdomen, you really want to palpate deep in there, be careful. Because there's fluid in there, and you squeeze too hard, you could pop the air sacs, and the fluid goes right in the respiratory tract, and the bird will die right in your hands. So if there's a fluidy feel, just gentle palpation. Or you feel an egg in there, and you start squeezing too hard, you crack the egg in there. So gentle palpation, okay? Because you don't want to have any problems and rupture the air sacs. The vent should be clean and unsoiled. Staining around the vent is usually due to intestinal tract disturbance of some type. Could be diarrhea or abdominal mass. We talked about the cloacal papillomas and the tumors. We talked about the enlarged vent, and the females indicate hormonal stimulation reproductive cycle. And there you go. There's another view of a cloacal papilloma. So you see a bird come in, it makes a straining noise when it goes to poop, and you see this, cloacal papilloma. Okay, but not all swellings are cloacal papillomas. This is cloacal prolapse. You see this a lot in cockatiels that are egg-laying. What you do with that, if there's an egg in there, you get the egg out, and then you replace that, and you can put a purse-string suture to hold it in place. The feet and legs of birds, they're similar to reptiles. The skin is smooth and shiny. You check the bottom for pressure sores or ulcerations. You see this due to poor nutrition, typically, or else they have standing on all the same size perch. Hyperkeratosis, you will see flakiness on the bird's legs quite often. It's due to a vitamin A deficiency. You can actually put like utter cream or bag balm, that'll soften some of that. We talk about tophi. Let me go through here and show you some pictures now. Pressure sores. Scales wearing thin at the bottom of the cage. This you've got ready to ulcerate through. How you take care of this bird? You put the bird on larger perches. He's on all small diameter perches, that's why his foot's wearing that way. So you want to make sure they have small diameter and large diameter perches. This bird here, he was on all large diameter perches and he ulcerated through here. Now this is a lot worse because these birds become lame because a tendon shoots right underneath here. This bird needed bandaging, he needed antibiotics, and he needed smaller diameter perches. Skatey leg, you're going to see this in canaries. This bird couldn't even stand up. I mean, you know, I mean, they say how bad did these birds have to get before people bring them in sometimes. But this is scaly leg. It's very similar to the nematocraptic mange in the budgies. You treat it with ivermectin, and what I do is I trim these back, and then I also put Urex cream on there. It takes a couple of treatments to get rid of it. Same type of thing with the budgies. It is a normal inhabitant of the skin, but overgrows. Here's tophi. We talked about that before. Another view, gouty tophi. So if you see a budgie whose feet are stiff, and you see that, it's pretty much ball game when they get this bad. But if the feet are just starting to get stiff, and you do your uric acid level, it's a little elevated, you can give them the allopurinol or the colchicine, you can help these guys. Mineralized kidneys. What happens when the kidneys fail quite often, we'll see their kidneys mineralized like this. And we talk about the gout. There's articular gout, which this one is. There's another one called visceral gout. What happens in visceral gout is there's no way, you can see why the bird died, but you don't know what caused this. Extreme dehydration can cause it, but a lot of times there's no cause of age. And so somebody brings in this bird that died suddenly, you open them up, you see all the uric acid deposits on the heart, all throughout the abdomen, but you don't know why it happened. And so you know why the bird died, but you don't know why this happened. But you see visceral gout and articular gout. Usually visceral gout, they just die. Articular gout, you can treat with the allopurinol. Structural abnormalities. A lot of times baby parrots are on improper diet, can have these folding fractures in here. This guy's got fractures all over the place. So that's why it's important when they're breeders that they have good nutrition. Sometimes when the parents are bred too much, these are two siblings. This bird here had splay legs. He couldn't stand up, and he's much smaller than the other one. When you see a bird that has splay legs, you can sometimes get by with doing hobbles. Hobbles, you just kind of bring their hock joints in here and use that for stability. Sometimes, in some really bad case, you have to be a little more intricate than that, but sometimes you get away with that, but those are called hobbles. Leg bands. Okay. If the bird doesn't need leg bands for identification, you should take them off. And when we do take them off, we put it in the client's record. We move the closed band. We put all the information on the band. Because I can't tell you how many times we've seen problems with leg bands leading to fractures of the legs, dislocation of the hock, and even loss of the foot. And the big bird that we have a whole heck of a problem with are the canaries. There's very little clearance between the leg band and the leg. And what happens is that thing gets caught, and then all of a sudden the leg starts turning red, and then it turns dark and necrotic, and it's ball game. Sometimes the first symptom you may see is the bird limping. This person brought the bird in, said, geez, my bird's foot is turning black. I think it must be the band. Can you take the band off and the bird will be okay? I said, no. And what I tell people with bands like this is this old cover your ass type of thing again. I say, listen, when it is this bad, sometimes the only thing holding the foot on is the band. And there's a chance I take the band off, the leg can fall off. Or you take the band off and there's only bone underneath it. So I warn them, and a bird like this, this bird lost its foot, obviously. But you have to tell the client right off the bat how bad it is. So you cover yourself. But it gets really extreme like that. This bird was lucky. This is a cockatiel, and they took good care of you. You can see the nails. I mean, really well taken care of. But here's the leg band in here, all the swelling. This bird was lucky. We were able to get the band off pretty safely, and the bird did okay. But like I say, if it's not needed for identification, remove it and put the information in the client record. Small bands can be taken off with really sharp tip wire clippers. And I will tell you, when you take these bands off, make sure you have really good tools and make sure they make a good clean cut because you don't want to break a leg. I mean, taking bands off is very, very scary. And I've been doing it a long time and they still worry me because, you know, the vein runs on the inside of the leg in these canaries and then you're cutting the band, all of a sudden it slips a little bit and then you got a sharp edge of the band, it slices that vein, then all of a sudden there's blood all over the place. So you got to be very, very careful. The stainless steel quarantine C-bands can be twisted open. What I do is I take two wire clippers, I kind of wedge them underneath there, and then I kind of open up like that. Works pretty good, because when you try to cut this stainless steel, it's a nightmare. But you can just wedge it, and you don't have to really work hard. Just kind of open up like that, and you take it right off. The ones are the stainless steel bands. Now, when you see a completely closed band on a bird's leg, that means the bird was domestically raised. When they're babies, they slide the band on, and then when they grow, it won't come off anymore. But we have a couple of breeders in our area that use these steel bands, and they're hard as hell to cut open. I have seen people try to use bolt cutters on them, and then they bring it in there. I'd say, I'm surprised you didn't break your bird's leg. Or some people use like a Dremel tool with a cutting wheel on it. And you talk about really being scary, because, yes. But I was going to say, when you use a Dremel, that metal gets really hot, so you've got to keep putting water on it to do it. Yes. Good. That's a good. Good point. Yeah, let me show you what we do here is we have these really great cutters, and it cuts right through those. So, what's that? Well, I've only broken a few legs. I'm getting pretty good at it. No, no, but I'm worried. But that idea is good with the drill too. So, yeah, so there's, you know, more than one way to skin a cat, as we say. But yeah, I do this all the time. The staff won't do it, but I'm pretty good at that. Now that I've said this, next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to cut a leg or I'm going to break a leg. I'm going to look at you and I'm going to go like this, you know. So if your ears burn, you know, in a couple of weeks, you know what happened. So I tell the clients not to take it off themselves, obviously. The wings, check for range of motion. Look for fracture, dislocation, old injuries. The one thing I want to make sure I tell you, I know we got it. I'm on the home stretch here. One fact I want to tell you guys is whenever birds have been surgically sexed, they're going to be tattooed. So part of your examination, especially in older birds, if you've never seen it before, is extend the wings and look in the wing web. In the males, they're going to be tattooed on the right web of the right wing web, and the females are tattooed on the left wing web. The reason is because the female obviously has the left ovary and the left oviduct. That's why they're tattooed on the left. But whenever they were surgically sexed, there was a little bead of India ink that's put there. So I always, in my examination, I'm always checking for that. So remember, female left, male on the right. I'm going to say this, it's sexist, but the only reason I'm saying it is because remember it. But remember, the males are tattooed on the right because they're always right. Okay? The males are always right. I'm sorry, guys, but now you're going to say, when you think about it, you're not going to forget it. Okay? So, but that's why. Because you're going to say, is he over on the right or left? Now you'll never forget. Okay? So let's see if I get any more pictures here. Oh yeah, Eclectus feather picker. This bird had two problems. Bird was a feather picker, plus had nutritional deficiency. That's why he has yellow feathers on his head. This bird here was a feather picker, shredding his feathers. Feather picker. We use the collars. Sometimes use like a neck piece, but you can see the feathers on the head are normal, and he's doing the self mutilation there. Sometimes the birds don't adjust the collars very well. This bird's hanging from the top of his cage, is dangling there. He's almost like a little light there. This is a feather cyst on a canary. Let me show you here. Feather cysts are hereditary in canaries. You take these things out, you lance it, you pop the core out, and you cauterize it with silver nitrate, or you even do it surgically. The problem is these things can't come back. Every time a bird goes through a molting and redevelop again. Pretty soon, sometimes it's so bad that people just put them to sleep. That's a traumatized feather. Night fright in cockatiels. Cockatiels, especially Latinos, in the middle of the night, they get startled. They start banging around. They break their blood feathers. When there's a broken blood feather, what you have to do is you have to grasp that with your fingers, a broken feather, pull the whole feather out, and then either apply pressure for an extended period of time, put clotting powder or something to stop the bleeding. You can use Tippic powder, flour, cornstarch, what have you. Sometimes people just want to use this pressure, but you have to make sure the bleeding stops. But you got to get that broken feather out. The skin should be thin. We see some self-mutilation cases. This is, let's see here. Two things. If you do too extreme of a wing clip, the bird can get into trouble. So it's very important with heavy-bodied birds when you do a wing clip that you only cut 5 of the primary fights on both sides. If you cut 10, they're going to be too heavy. They're going to hit the deck, and they're going to split their keel bone, okay? Bird skin is very, very thin, okay? So it's bone underneath and just very thin skin. So they hit the ground, that skin splits, and this can be a real nightmare to treat. You suture it, and you keep the sutures in for an extended period of time because birds don't have a whole lot of subcutaneous tissue, so they don't have a lot of granulation. So it takes a long time for this to heal. Another problem we see is split sternum. I'm sorry, a split tail or torn pigastyle. That Q-tip is in the vent. This bird came to us on a second opinion. They thought it was a papilloma, and they wanted me to treat it surgically. And actually, the vent was up here. What happens to baby cockatiels? They don't have very good knowledge of flight. They hit the deck, and when they hit the deck, the tail attachment to the body splits, and the skin tears right in here. This is surgical. You've got to suture that up. That's called split tail. Auscultation. It can be very difficult, and birds can have a rapid heart rate, but do it because you can pick up murmurs. Okay, well, sorry, guys. I kind of whipped through there, but I wanted to give you as much information as I could. You know, just even seeing these pictures and talking about these things, I hope it'll prove useful to you. Like I said, if you have any questions, give me a call. If you're interested in the handouts, please call or email me. And like I say, take a look at the book upstairs. You got a lot of good information, and like I say, Digitel, they have the proceedings, so just make sure, if you're interested, go up there. Thanks for your attention, and I hope to talk to you all soon.
Thanks for your job, Will.
Yeah, thanks.